This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. The Paris 2024 Olympics get underway later this week, and the excitement continues to build for all the competitors, coaches, officials, and fans. Under my guest leadership, the USA Wrestling team has won 26 Olympic medals with 9 gold. USA Wrestling had its first women's Olympic wrestling champion in 2016, and the U.S. women's wrestling performance has improved with a gold, a silver, and 2 bronze medals at the 2020 Games, and a record-tying 7 medals at the Women's World Championships in 2021 and 2022. Why do I mention this? Because this has been one of the passions of my guest, USA Wrestling CEO Rich Bender. Thanks for joining us on Sports Jam.
Boy, my honor, Doug. Glad to chat with you today.
We're talking not only about the oldest sport in the Olympic Games, but you have led one of the most successful periods in USA wrestling history, both on and off the mat. Why is that, Rich?
Well, just I guess I have to say, from a leadership perspective, in the right place at the right time. And I said for years now that wrestling has been on the precipice of its golden age, and just been really blessed to be in have the opportunities I've had within this organization. Started with USA Wrestling in July of 1988 as an intern, and never left, and certainly been blessed to be in a leadership position in a time of enormous growth, and none more important than the opportunity of women to participate in the greatest sport we've ever known.
We're going to talk about your background, because you were a 3-sport athlete and lettered in all 3 sports that we'll talk about in a bit. So we know that, you come from an athletic background, but wrestling, for a lot of people, once you're out of high school or you're out of college, it's no longer a part of your life. But for you, it's been your life when it comes to sports. What is it about wrestling at this highest level that really gets your juices going?
Well, I think what gets my juices going is what the sport does for people. And I've said this many times, that anyone that's been touched or participated in this sport is better for it, period. No, never been an exception. And it's just unbelievable. And it's really inspiring to be around a sport that touches and impacts lives. We say that wrestling is training for the rest of your life, and it really is true. And, it's been a life passion of mine. I've been blessed to be around the sport that I love so much. But that's, the passion and the inspiration for me comes from what the sport does for those that are around it.
Give us some of those qualities that they don't have to be champions, just participating at the Olympic level. What makes them a better person, when they go through the USA Wrestling program?
Well, I think that, the realities are, the impact that the sport teaches is life lessons, right? Sacrifice, commitment. And we say all the time that wrestling has a way of exposing your investment in the sport. And if you're not living right, if you're not training correctly, if you're not making good decisions off the mat, it impacts your success on the mat. So, wrestling has a unique way of teaching us life lessons that are really applicable to life. And it's really cool to see.
It's very unusual to continue to be at the top level in this sport for many years, but I've had a chance to speak with several Olympic champions through the years here on Sports Jam. And one of them was Kyle Snyder in advance of the 2016 Games. He would go on to win gold that year. He won silver in 2020, and he's still competing in the 2024 Games.
And Kyle Snyder reigns supreme in the United States again. His 10th straight world or Olympic team will represent the United States at a 3rd consecutive Olympics. And there's everybody in the front row. Family in tow for Kyle Snyder. His wife, Maddie. And the family all there.
What is it about Kyle to have that kind of stamina and commitment to wrestling to compete in 3 Olympic Games?
Well, Kyle's had a passion for wrestling that's very unique. And I mean, obviously a lot of people have a passion for wrestling, but the intense passion that Kyle has for the sport and his focus on winning and achieving success at the highest level is pretty unique. And I'll give you an example. When Kyle was going into his senior year in high school, I grew up in Maryland, was a three-time undefeated state high school champion in Maryland, decided that he was going to forego his senior year in high school, which is, I mean, to win four state high school championships, to go undefeated through your entire four-year career is really a bit unprecedented. It doesn't happen very often. And Kyle saw early on, what was bigger, what remained a bigger prize for him in the sport was to be an Olympic champion. And made the decision to move to Colorado Springs, forego his senior year in high school, and trained full time at the United States Olympic Training Center here in Colorado Springs. And went on to become the youngest American male to win a gold medal for us at the games in Rio. And I, you mentioned that he won gold there, and I think Kyle's, I mean, most significant accomplishment to date, I guess I could, there's some that would debate me on this, was in 2017 at the World Championship. So Kyle's coming off an Olympic gold medal, a great competitor from Russia at 86 kilos, had made a pretty public announcement that he was going up to Kyle's weight class from Rio, where he was Olympic champion too, and going to knock off the American hero, or Captain America, a lot of people refer to him as. And the International Federation at those championships recognized that, man, this could be a pretty big matchup, and moved that weight class's gold medal match to the final match of the event. And at that event, it came down to the gold medal match against Kyle's long rival Sadulayev from Russia, and Kyle for the gold medal. But not only was it for a gold medal, the two returning Olympic champions, but also the team score was dead tied. There was no difference in the team race, the scoring, and it came down to whoever won that match, their team would be world champions. And Kyle, won an historic match there, and I think cemented himself, as one of the most important and significant freestyle American wrestlers ever. And he continues to perform at an incredibly high level. And we have big hopes for him here next month in Paris to bring home another gold medal. But certainly, he's driven by a unique passion for the sport. But I think also important to recognize is Kyle's driven by things outside of wrestling too. It's not just wrestling all the time. He's a strong man of faith, unbelievable father. His wife's pregnant with their second, coming shortly, and but he has a big focus and passion on his responsibilities as a dad and a husband. And he does a phenomenal job of balancing the rigors of being one of the greatest American or greatest wrestlers on the planet. And the rigors that goes with that is no joke, right? His commitment to physical fitness, obviously in preparation for wrestling, is pretty strong, but pretty balanced cat for sure.
And you mentioned next month, because August is when the matches will be held for wrestling in the 2024 games in Paris. I've never wrestled at a competitive level, Rich. You could put me on my back and pin me in probably less than 5 seconds, and I know Kyle could, but what has changed in the sport of wrestling since you took over that has made a significant, pivotal role in how wrestlers go about their business now? Have the moves changed? I know everybody keeps getting faster and stronger, but has there been techniques that have changed?
Well, I think I don't know so much as techniques have changed, but certainly, preparation and recovery and technology has changed to, I mean, you mentioned a guy like Kyle Snyder, and the current president of USA Wrestling is a guy named Bruce Baumgartner, who is a 13-time world and Olympic medalist, and arguably the most successful American wrestler, well, not arguably, the most successful American wrestler of all time. and just the generational change. I was blessed to be around the sport at a very high level for, you know, over three decades now. And I think about, you know, the technology and the intentionalness around, you know, physical fitness and preparation is, I mean, there's more science to it today than there was back then. But I think, you know, the most significant change that I've experienced, what happened in 2013, and that's when the International Olympic Committee voted to take wrestling off the Olympic program, which, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why that was, why wrestling was in that discussion. But I think it, you know, gave the sport an opportunity and a wake up call, if you will. At the time, you know, refereeing was a bit corrupt. Rules were a little bit hard to follow. And there was a lot of gray areas to calls around the sport. You know, what constituted a takedown, what didn't. And in 2013, with that challenge, you know, that wrestling was faced with a big challenge, right? We had to make some changes as a sport, some fundamental changes to how the sport was officiated and, you know, the fairness, to the sport and make some changes to stay on the Olympic program. And we did that. The International Federation cleaned up this act, if you will, officiating. Now we have a review. We have a review process. Always had three referees officiating a match, and two of the three have to agree to score points. But a significant change that has happened is this review and this accountability process to refereeing. So I would say the big changes that I've experienced were, you know, preparation and recovery changes, and how technology and it has impacted that. And then also, you know, accountability and transparency around officiating, I think, has been a monster change. Takedown still kind of is a takedown, still same techniques that worked, you know, three, four decades ago work today. But I think, you know, technology and accountability are the two biggest changes that I've seen.
So as you see behind me, I, you know, I've had Jocelyn Lamoureux there and Trinity Rodman and Hillary Knight and many people who have reached high levels in women's sports, which has exploded onto the scene, right? From the changes in the WNBA to the pay for soccer players in the U.S. women's soccer program and how they are paid. But it was back in 2004 that Rich Bender wanted to make sure that women's wrestling happened. So you are way ahead of that curve. Tell us why.
Well, I mean, it's obvious to me, and I think others, that you know, the impact that the sport has on males has the same potential to have that kind of impact on females. And, you know, I think for years the women's wrestling struggled for acceptance just simply because, you know, we didn't have enough scale, enough women wrestlers that girls could wrestle girls, and we kept facing a headwind of, you know, girls shouldn't wrestle because, and that because was usually people were getting hung up on girls wrestling guys and boys wrestling girls. And, you know, there's, you know, some that, you know, thought that just wasn't right. And we knew that at the end of the day, no girl should be denied an opportunity to participate in this sport, because we know how cool and how great it is and how impactful it can be. And so, you know, we continued to push on, and knowing that if we could just get to scale, where we didn't have those headwinds of, you know, opinion about, you know, whether or not guys should wrestle girls and vice versa, that we would get traction. And we were able to get traction. We're able to convince our International Wrestling Federation in the early 2000s that, you know, women's wrestling should be on the Olympic program. And obviously, in 2002, we're able to convince the International Olympic Committee to add women to the program, and we were off to the races after that. But, you know, funny story, and as an intern in the summer of 1988, I was asked it's not really a thesis, but my last paper to fulfill my college education, I was asked to do a paper on why USA Wrestling should fund the women's world team to go to the women's world championships in 1989. And, you know, looking back, it was pretty cool to be a part of that. And even cooler to work for an organization that recognized that and saw that, you know, this was an opportunity that was ahead of us. And, you know, one thing that this organization's never wavered from when, you know, women were added to the program is that our contracts for our men are the same as for the girl, are the women. And, you know, there's no difference in, you know, you win a gold medal for Team USA, the girls are going to get paid $250,000 just like the guys are. And, you know, if you look at our national team contracts today, there's no difference. And, you know, so it's also important to point out that, you know, the organization has a massive commitment to equality and providing women with the same opportunity that men have, and recognizing that, hey, you know, guys have been at this for thousands of years, women haven't. And, you know, so, you know, as we, you know, we have to make some unique investments into women's wrestling that maybe we don't have to on the men's side. But, you know, certainly, you know, women's wrestling is, you know, at the front and center of this organization. And, you know, we think it's a frontier for growth for us to move forward. We've seen massive growth in our organization over the last couple of years, with some 80,000 more members today than we had 2 years ago. And, you know, a lot of that is women, but I think also a lot of it's infrastructure that provides, you know, opportunity for boys and men to participate in sport too.
Speaking of growth, I understand New Jersey and New York, the growth of the sport of wrestling continues to expand. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a national phenomenon, if you will. Women's wrestling is the fastest growing sport for young girls in high school. And, you know, we've seen growth. USA Wrestling's made up of 50 state chapters, 342,000 members of USA Wrestling as of, you know, yesterday, I believe. And you know, that growth's coming from all over the country, and not just in women's wrestling. You know, women's wrestling continues to grow for sure, and it'd be a big driver in those percentage growths. But, you know, New York, New Jersey, you know, the sport's really entering an age of increased relevance. You know, it's Henry Cejudo, Olympic champion for us in 2008, said very eloquently one time, he said, you know, the cool thing about wrestling is that to be successful in this sport, all you need is a pair of shoes and a dream. And there's truth to that, right? I mean, there's, you know, we don't have equipment and, you know, things that, you know, big cost barrier, if you will, to participate, but it, you know, it's a pretty innate, sport. So, you know, we really are excited about the growth and you know, talking about growth in New Jersey and New York, that doesn't happen without, you know, great infrastructure and coaches and leaders and administrators that, as Vince Lombardi said, right, what makes organizations great is individual commitment to a group effort. And that's what's going on in New York and New Jersey, and, you know, leaders and coaches and club directors there that are, you know, paying attention to, you know, what it takes to grow relevancy in their little clubs sometimes, or their larger state chapters. And, you know, New Jersey and New York's no exception. Wrestling's on fire in that state. We had our final X, we call it, there's 10 weight classes normally in a world championship. And we had our final wrestle off where we narrow it all down to you know, two athletes per weight. So 30 weights, 10 per discipline. And we call it our final X. And we did our final X at the Prudential Center last year and had an awesome event in, you know, but New Jersey is wrestling country for us, and New York is as well, but pretty cool place to be.
Absolutely. And one of the things I enjoy about watching Olympic wrestling is, first of all, I don't know the rules, right? So I can't follow and know that every move that somebody is making is going to be the right one. I just appreciate the talent, but it's also quick, right? It's also a quick event. The match is over before you know it. And you learn the more you watch, you learn. Who are the people that you think we should be watching? Who are the rising stars? Who are the Olympic hopefuls for medalists that we should be looking at?
Well, so a little history here. So we won 9 medals in Tokyo, and I would normally say 4 years ago, but because of COVID, it was just 3 years ago. But 9 medals was the most medals that we'd won collectively as a Olympic team since 1984, when, you know, the games were boycotted. And, you know, just Wrestling is the number three all-time medal-producing sport for the U.S. Olympic team. Track and field and swimming are the only two sports that have won more medals for our country than wrestling. So, you know, we come with a big tradition, but, you know, and sometimes I say maybe even a little bit unhealthy expectations that, you know, wrestling's difficult, right? 16 best wrestlers in the six weight classes, which are condensed down from 10 to six, will be in Paris. But, you know, on the Greco-Roman side of things, we have four of the six possible weight classes qualified. We have a couple of guys that have won world medals in the past, and Kamal Bey and Adam Kuhn. Adam being a former world silver medalist, which is in some cases it's certainly a larger event than the Olympic Games, but, you know, more competitors in a weight class. He's won silver in that event. And Kamal Bey, who is was a junior world champion for us in when he was coming up through the ranks, obviously has some pretty elite experience. Joe Rao and Peyton Jacobson are guys that are going to surprise some people, and their preparation will set them apart. These are grinders, guys that are going to go out and you say it's over before you know it. Well, it isn't when you're wrestling a guy like Joe Rao or Peyton Jacobson. It's not. These guys are grinders that are going to make you feel the American system. And so we have big expectations for those four wrestlers. On the women's freestyle side, we're going in with six of six. So maximum we can qualify is six. Obviously, Japan is a team for us to beat, and they'll be there in force. But every single weight class, we have a age group or senior level world medalist. So, you know, a force to be reckoned with on the mats there. I mean, obviously led by, you know, our first Olympic champion, you mentioned top of the show, and Helen Morales, and some great young talent. Amit Allure, who's hasn't lost internationally for us at the age group level or the senior level. She's coming down from 72 kilos, and, you know, a veteran like Sarah Hildebrand that's been in the finals of the world championships, been Olympic medalist. Kayla Miracle, same way, been at the Olympic Games before and been a world medalist. And Dawn Parrish, who's world champion. She's a world champion in this squad. So, you know, she's a threat. And then you mentioned Adeline Gray. Kennedy Blades beat Adeline Gray in our final trials, and she'll be our representative 70 at that weight class, and she's a age group world medalist too. So really all six of our women's wrestlers are our medal hopes. And then you come to the men's freestyle team, and, you know, this isn't arrogance or bragging, the best team on the planet. I mean, we've won the last two world championships. We'll send six athletes to Paris, and every one of them with a goal of being a gold medalist. Now it's unheard of to win all six weights, but we have a Olympic medalist or a world Olympic medalist in every one of those weights. And if you told me individually, you know, Mason Paris won a gold medal, it wouldn't surprise me. And but Kyle Schneider and David Taylor, who was pound for pound the best wrestler on the planet for the last couple of years, he was upset in. I don't know if it's fair to say that it's an upset, but, you know, that the match with Aaron Brooks in Penn State was a surprise.
If Taylor can elevate that leg, he can get a 2-point turn.
He's got to do it now. 10 seconds left. The Tokyo Olympic gold medalist gets called to a stalemate back to the center with 8 seconds remaining. The Magic Man looking to pull a rabbit out of his hat late. And Aaron Brooks is the one who's going to push on to Paris.
Big win. Huge win for Aaron Brooks, making his first Olympic team.
Your Olympic team nominee is going to be Brooklyn.
The great respect from Aaron Brooks, knocking out a defending Olympic gold medalist and a guy who has as good a shot as any to potentially continue a run of success for the United States at the Olympics.
Aaron Brooks is a world champion at that, at the age group. And, you know, his time is now. So, you know, guy, when you can beat the best wrestler on the planet in two or three matches, you got to be an Olympic gold medal hope going into the, to the Olympics. And you, you know, put those guys with Kyle Dake, who's world champion, Olympic medalist, Zane Rutherford, who's world champion, and Spencer Lee, who's, you know, won, I think, more age group gold medals than any freestyle wrestler we've had. So, I mean, 16 medal hopes is what I tell you. And, you know, will we win 16 medals? I hope so. We win 16 gold. I hope that's what happens. But, you know, the sport is tough. It's, you know, one of the realities of our sport is the diversity of what the sport's contested all over the world. More different countries win medals in the sport of wrestling than every sport except for track and field. Track and field has some 96 different events where, you know, wrestling is, you know, a worldwide sport. It's participated at an incredibly high level in, you know, 200 countries around the world. And so, you know, there's some really good wrestlers that will that all be really good, but, you know, it kind of speaks to the strength of the American wrestling program and the infrastructure that exists, that, you know, whoever steps on the tape that day with USA on their chest is going to be a threat. So, you know, we're fired up and excited, and, you know, talk about unhealthy expectations. And right, if you hear me talking and say, hey, I can see where that comes from, you listen to this guy. But, you know, really, we do have big expectations. And, you know, it's interesting because you think back just a couple Olympics ago, you know, winning two medals or three medals was considered a good performance. And now we're thinking double digits is what we're after.
That's fantastic. Rich Bender, by the way, was born and raised in Wisconsin. And I mentioned at the top of the show, a three-sport athlete, lettering in football, wrestling, and baseball. Which was your best sport?
Well, I played baseball in college for a couple of years. I mean, funny story, I have a seventh grade report card that on the back of my report card, my grades in seventh grade science had been on a bad trajectory from an 87 or a 90 to an 80 to a 70. And in the back of the report card, my seventh grade science teacher, Jerry Fitzgerald, who's, God rest him, when it was a great mentor of mine, wrote on the back of that report card to my dad and my mom is, wrestling. All Rich wants to do is talk about wrestling. Can you tell him there's more to life than wrestling? And it was funny. I when I was fortunate enough to be inducted to the Hall of Fame the year before last, that was in my case. So, you know, I got to laugh about that with Mr. Fitzgerald before he passed, but it was, it's been, you know, part of my life. I mean, I've, you know, wrestling's been at the core of who Rich Bender is from as long as I can remember. You know, I had a cousin who was a really successful high school wrestler that really put in me a fire for the sport. And then, you know, I grew up in a really small rural, community and, you know, small high school, and, you know, everybody had to participate, right? If you didn't play football or wrestle or play baseball, we didn't have enough. So, you know, was exposed to, you know, sport, and, you know, had a, you know, bit of a gift, I guess, and, you know, to be able to play, all those sports and participate at, you know, obviously varsity high school level, and, you know, it impacted, you know, my life. And, but I would say I certainly loved wrestling more than the other two, but it's probably the best in baseball for sure.
That's really interesting. And the fact, by the way, congratulations on the Hall of Fame, getting that notoriety, well-deserved. So the final question that I have for you may not be the most easiest one to answer. We live in turbulent times. We live in divided times right here in the U.S. Are the Olympics still an event that can bring us all together, Rich? And do people still have the same passion for the Olympics that maybe they had years ago?
No question about it. In, you know, the words of Pierre de Coubertin back in, you know, when he envisioned the modern Olympic movement was, you know, the betterment of mankind through sport was the mantra. And I think that remains true today. I think wrestling and sport has, you know, proven to be, you know, the great unifier. And I think, you know, we're going to see in Paris, you know, kind of a celebration of, you know, triumph over the COVID and triumph over, you know, a lot of different things. And obviously the world's an unstable place for sure. But, you know, wrestling is, you know, is a great ambassador for peace. It's just a wonderful, way to spread diplomacy around the world. And, you know, mentioned, you know, Russia and Iran, and the State Department said to me many times that, Rich, you know, the thing that we've come to know about wrestling is that, you know, wrestling's popular wherever the U.S. isn't. And so we look at our chief rivals. Iran will be, you know, that's going to be our main rival, obviously Japan on the women's side and Iran, men's freestyle side, and, you know, a lot of the Eastern European countries and Greco, but all have strong, you know, wrestling programs and all the disciplines. But, you know, I think we've proven, the sport's proven that, you know, wrestling and sport can transcend politics. And, you know, we're going to come in to Paris with a, you know, pretty singular focus to win. And, you know, that means if it's a Iranian or a, you know, a Russian or a Belarusian or a Ukrainian, you know, we're there to compete and win. And then at the end of the day, shake hands. And, you know, we're a sport that shakes hands before we start and after we're done. And, you know, it's proven time and time again. It's joked about this in the late 90s when, you know, we were the first sports team to go into Iran and participate after the, you know, the revolution. And in, you know, came back and President Clinton had our team, you know, in the White House. You know, what we came evident to us early on is that, man, we are fierce competitors on the mat, but we're humans. And you know, it's certainly in the sport of wrestling, I can say that for sure. It's a family, and it unifies. It's some, you know, dear friends that are, you know, don't see the same political view as I have, but yet love the sport of wrestling, love to compete. And I think that's true of the Olympic movement. I think, you know, we're going to see in Paris that on full display. I think you're going to, regardless of conflicts that are going around the world, you know, athletes are going to come together for the spirit of sport, and diplomacy is going to be on full display. And, you know, I think the fact that we're through COVID, I think, is also another reason for us to celebrate. You know, unfortunately, I was there in Tokyo when, you know, there was nobody in the stands, and, you know, we all were wearing masks. And, you know, funny that you think about, right? Wrestling and social distancing are the kind of the antithesis of one another. Yet, you know, we have a sport that's, you know, shown phenomenal growth, and you know, continues to, I think, embark on its greatest years.
Where's that seventh grade report card at now?
It's actually, I haven't got it back. I usually have it in here,
but I figured you'd probably have it in your office.
Back from Stillwater. But yeah, it's a piece that I hold dear.
Yeah, constant reminder of a message that was sent, but really it has become everything for you. Yeah. So it's really ironic that you would get that. And I knew you had to save that report card, and I knew it had to be somewhere. Rich Bender is the CEO of the USA wrestling team, and his success, the Hall of Famer. We thank you so much, and, you know, we wish you the best of luck here in the Paris Summer Games here. They'll be on NBC, the Olympics, so you'll be able to catch all the action there. Rich, what a pleasure, and continued success.
Thanks, Doug. My honor, and go USA.
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can hear all the past shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Thanks going out this week to Joe Favorito for hooking us up with Rich Bender. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.